Moncrief on News Talk.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. It is time for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
How are you doing? Right, here's your first question for you today. I have told my four-year-old son that if a kid pushes him in the playground, say, that he has my full permission to push back, and likewise with being hit or kicked. I don't want him being walked all over or picked on. My wife completely disagrees with this and says he should just walk away. He would be an anxious enough kid, and I'm just trying to boost his confidence. Am I wrong?
Oh, I love a question that ends with, am I wrong?
Yeah.
I feel like if you're asking the question, there's something in you that is questioning it yourself. And as always, I think as parents, we have to try as best we can to be on, at least most of the time, mostly the same page, because otherwise our children are getting very conflicting and contradictory messages from us. And that creates confusion. And especially if you have a little guy who you're saying is already prone towards worry or stress or anxiety, that's certainly not going to help. And then the other part of this for me, Sean, was, you know, if I'm an anxious enough kid and I have a parent who keeps prepping me for being pushed when I haven't been pushed yet and hit when I haven't been hit yet, I'm fairly sure that's going to make me worry. So I was immediately interested in why this is so important to this parent that they are, proactively encouraging aggression in a really young child, four-year-old child. So I would say, look, stop. Stop all of that. Do not coach him to push back or to hit back or kick back or whatever it is you're saying. Just don't do that. You want instead to work, really kind of promoting strength of character, kindness. We can be really dismissive of these as weak traits. And actually, it's quite the opposite. You know, kindness is a vulnerable process. You have to take a chance. You have to put yourself out there. It's actually an act of courage and bravery. So strength of character and kindness with even promoting assertiveness over, aggressivity, because that aggressive behavior is only going to cause your son trouble. It's not going to fix any trouble. So again, when you were reading this out, I'm thinking, I don't hear anything in here that says this is already an issue. You know, he's already been pushed or hit or kicked and we've exhausted all other things and we're desperate at this stage. This just seems to be something that maybe a projection from the parent, and if not, that this parent could benefit from maybe sitting back and just considering, you know, what is my child's temperament? What is their natural temperament? And is this something that is really contraindicated for them? Also, just reflect on what your cultural expectations of boys might be and, you know, how outdated or, you know, maybe invalid those are. If we see the boys should be doing this and boys should be doing that, you know, all of that stuff is just not helpful. And, you know, what you're proposing here isn't actually how you affect self-esteem boost in children. Because I did read, you know, look, you are trying to booster his confidence. This is not how to do it. So in order to affect meaningful, sustained improvement or strengthening in self-esteem in children, you focus on effort over outcome. You focus on praise that is very specific and is about them. So I would say find activities and play where he can, you know, practice leading, practice, you know, making choices, independent skills, embrace all of that at this age. He's four, it's usually kind of 4 years old upwards that they're eligible to join little team sports and activities when those are back up and running, which we hope will be sooner rather than later. But those kinds of team sports are great for all of this and leadership skills, because you get the collaborative piece of working with your teammates and the competitive piece of the games and the matches. So actually, it's great for children in terms of confidence building. It gives you lots of opportunity to praise effort over outcome and to really be specific in that praise. Also, you're going to things like swimming or just trying out new things, give him an opportunity to master new skills and master tension-rousing experiences. Again, that's going to boost his self-confidence and feed into that leadership and independence and his capacity to be assertive and confident. And honestly, I think that is the best way to approach this rather than what you're doing right now. So I'm not going to get into are you right or wrong. I'm just going to say maybe reflect on why this is so important to you. Sit with your partner, get on at least mostly the same page and focus on this through the lens of your child, who he is and what he needs. I think that's going to be the best approach here.
Yeah, maybe they might think about what was their own experience in school.
Exactly. And that's, is this... that's what I'm dancing around.
Yes. Right. The next question is, I think this is a classic of a parenting question, because it's that, you know, this is where parents start to become hypocrites. I have three daughters and work on empowering them and teaching them about feminism and equality. I don't ever want them to feel like they can't do something in life. All good in theory, but now I'm finding myself conflicted, especially with my eldest, mainly concerning her dress sense. She wears what can only be described as bras as tops, and very, very tight stretchy pants or jeans. So tight, I don't know how her blood flows. I encouraged her to get a job when she was 16 and have her own money, so her clothes are bought with her money, which is great. But I find myself questioning her judgment on these clothes. I don't understand why she has to show so much skin. I worry about the image she's sending our younger daughters and what people think when they see her. Do they see the intelligent girl I know she is, or just her backside? I know this is something I'm struggling with and not her. Does Joanna think I should at least just explain how I'm feeling so she's aware, or am I undermining everything I've been telling her all these years?
Oh, it's like a little from column A and a little from column B, because you've consciously made all of these assertions with your daughters, you know, about feminism, equality, that, you know, you are not how you look, you are how you are and who you be, how you behave. And you've done all this and now you're faced with absolutely undermining and contradicting everything that you've been telling them. But that is coming from a place of concern, and it's coming from a place of, I want the best for her. I see so much good in her. I want everyone to see her like I see her. And you have a young woman who is saying, I want people to see me as I see me. I want to be independent and assertive. And there is, you know, during adolescence, this whole process, one of the five adjustments is this process of estrangement, where our teenagers really, you know, in pulling away from us and establishing, I am nothing like you. I am my own person. This process of individuation and separation. They experiment with new tastes, new clothes, new makeup, new friends, basically things that say, this is who I am, and it is other than you. And that is absolutely healthy, normal, and to be welcomed and embraced. And in fact, it reflects that you've done a great job, that she is empowered to make these assertions and choices for herself. I would suggest that instead of telling her what her clothes are saying, because very much it's what they're saying to you. Clothes are inanimate. They do not speak. These are projections from you. These are inferences you're making. And on behalf, often we do imagine other people are thinking, is actually a way of saying, this is what I'm thinking and feeling. So really own that. And instead of telling her what her clothes are saying to you, be curious about how she's feeling, and be curious about how she's specifically feeling, being able to choose and buy clothes for herself, how empowering that must be, and how independent she must feel. I think that's fantastic that she's got a job, she's out there taking care of herself and making these independent choices. She's experimenting with taste, she's exploring the boundaries of herself. This is all really healthy stuff for me. I think as well, when we look at how our teenagers dress and how they do experiment with taste, clothing and things like that, you know, often look around them and who they're with as well, their peer group. Often they're dressing like their peer group, and always hold in mind that their peers hold much more influence over them and the choices they make than we do at this stage. We have to trust that everything that we've put in leading up to this is still in there, and that she's making those choices that you have influenced her on leading up to this point. I just think, you know, Sean, clothes, and you're right, this is such a common thing that comes up with parenting, but clothes are, they're a very powerful way to communicate. And they're a very, you know, powerful way to communicate who we are, what we're experimenting with, expression of our own desire. But they're also a fun way to just experiment and see how it feels to be in different clothing, different appearances, try out different looks, and really to see what responses you can elicit from other people. And this is a pretty powerful response, you know, she's eliciting from her parent. So just be really aware of what you do next, and hold tight to why was it important for you from the beginning to raise your daughters in a way that empowers them and teaches them about equality and feminism and independence. Because go back to those basics, and that will guide you on what to do here. But I really think, you know, we have to be very careful about telling our kids, especially our young women, Do you know what your clothes are saying? Do you know what messages you're putting out there? Because they're messages we're putting on them, not messages they're putting out.
Yeah, I given I've been this soldier, the lesson to learn is not, you don't say to them, do you know what your clothes are saying? Because the parent doesn't know what her clothes are saying.
No.
That's the point, because it's not communicated at you at all. It's communicated at their peers for the most
part. Totally. Absolutely agree. And their idea of
showing a lot of skin doesn't, they don't sexualize it, but they don't sexualize it to anything like the degree that her parents do. And there's no kind of correlation between, because I'm showing a bit of skin, I can't be a lawyer or a doctor or anything. There's no contradiction there at all for them.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And that's the thing. It's coming from a place of, oh, my goodness, my daughter is growing up. She's making very different choices than the ones I made for her. But I've raised her to be a person who can make independent choices. But now I'm kind of going, oh, was I right to do that? Because I'd really like to be still calling the shots. It's very difficult to be the parent of a teenager who is on the cusp of young adulthood and is saying, thanks, I've got it from here. I can do it. They're still going to need you. They're still going to need your support and encouragement. And you can still be their biggest cheerleader and should be. So I think stick with that. But cast your mind back to the things that you wore yourself. You know, how many short skirts and going out in short shorts, and what were your parents saying to you? This is not a new phenomenon. This is intergenerational. There's always something about clothing and outfits and the image we're putting out there. But I think we have to go back to basics and say that we are more than what we're wearing. You know, that's not what this is about.
Yeah. Though still, you'd wish sometimes I might wear a coat. especially at this time of the year. Do you have any tips on teaching a 4-year-old to walk safely beside her dad without running off? She often wants to race us and will break her hand free and run ahead. Honestly, she's so fast it can be a job catching up with her. She also has a scooter and will only let her use it in the park or in the back garden because she honestly is a menace on it. I can't trust her on the footpath. My fear is that she'll run off and get out of sight or fall into the traffic. She obviously sees no danger, but it's all I see. How do I teach her as she won't listen?
Oh, it's a perfect example of how a parent and a child view the world and every situation so differently. You're seeing the danger, the threat, the fear, because you're motivated, of course, to protect her and keep her safe. And she's saying, oh my goodness, look at this big, exciting world. I'm going to throw myself headfirst into it. She's focused on fun, excitement. This is not, you know, reading like a child who's doing this, being oppositional or being defiant or acting out. This is a child who's just, woohoo, let's go for it. Let's really go for it. And you've got, you know, and again, this is not special to your child, you know, 4 years old. Impulse control is not a big skill strength that most 4-year-olds have. Delayed gratification, impulse control is still developing. I also think, you know, running off away from your parents is a young child's way of exploring independence. I can do it myself. I don't need to hold your hand. And they just don't see the dangers as we do. They don't see them at all sometimes. I think change how you're focused on this, because you're going out with, I can imagine, holding your breath and trepidation and already warning her, don't do this and don't do that and listen to me. Instead, maybe switch it to be very clear about what you do want from her. We will hold hands walking on the pavement and we will race and chase each other in the park. So I do get to race and chase, but you're telling me where I get to do it. And there isn't now. Are you listening? Do you promise you'll hold my hand? It's a statement. We will be holding hands. And if not, you're going to have to go home. And not again in a look, you ruined it for everyone way, but in a way of, look, it just didn't feel safe to be out today because you weren't able to hold my hand. And I hope tomorrow that you're able to hold my hand and we get to go to the park so that we can race and chase. I think as well, you want to, when you're walking with her, because you know, if I'm a fast paced child and I'm excitement seeking, walking slowly, holding my parents' hand is just not that interesting and it's not engaging. So while you're walking, maybe try out things like funny walks. We're going to walk with baby steps. We're going to walk on our heels. We're going to walk on our toes. We're going to take giant steps. How do dinosaurs walk? How do frogs jump? You're going to change up how you're walking. Point out interesting things in the sky, funny shaped clouds, you know, the trees around you, things on the ground. You know, so you're keeping her focus in the immediate environment around her, but it's still interesting. Tell her to get really slow and quiet so that you can name all the sounds that you hear together. So you're breaking up the walk into these chunks of interesting, engaging activities. And I think that's going to really help you. I also think at home, really start practicing some impulse control play with her. Aim for a chunk of time every day. You know, this could be follow the leader, Simon Says, Mother May I, red light, green light, musical statues, all of those kind of start, stop, but taking your cue as to when to start and stop from the adult in charge, playing with it on a daily basis. And then being really clear about what you do want and where I do get to run free and wild and wacky and where I get to do that, and keeping me walking alongside you much more interesting and engaging than I'm currently experiencing it. I think if you keep with that in a very calm, consistent way, you will see change.
Mm. Right, we do have to take a break, and coming up after that break, actually you're doing as much marriage guidance counselling today as you were parenting questions. coming up after the break, deciding on school for a 4-year-old. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Joanna Fortune is still with us. We did have a question. The first question indeed was from one parent saying that they've told their 4-year-old that if anyone kicks them or pushes them to do it back to them, though their wife disagrees with this particular strategy. This texter says that dad is going about that completely the wrong way. And I say that as a 45-year-old man who was bullied as a child. And my father's reaction literally was, had the boxing gloves out and the punching bag, which made the whole thing doubly humiliating. And I can honestly say the shame I felt for not being hard enough from my dad did far more damage to my psyche than the bully. We have a great relationship, and even he admits now that he got it all wrong. That's something to consider. And someone else asks, how much do kids even fight in the playground anymore? I wouldn't have thought it's a thing, Joanna.
Well, look, at you, kids do get a little bit aggressive, especially when rough and tumble play. It starts off as great fun and it's a hop, skip and a jump till someone's in tears. That's kind of the nature of that rough and tumble type play. But it's also rough and tumble type play is very good for them. And, you know, a bit of pushing and shoving is often because I'm getting overexcited. I can't wait my turn. And it often comes down to impulse control because they're at that developmental age where they're not able to contain and they get overstimulated quite quickly. So it's not motivated by a thing of, I want to hurt you, I want to cause you distress. So I just think, you know, that whole kind of piece about aggression in young kids, don't psychopathologize it and don't set your son up to, you're going to be a target and I'm now going to teach you how not to be, when that hasn't been his lived experience. I think you could actually end up increasing the child's anxiety. Mm. I really kind of echo, you know, a lot of what that man is saying, that, you know, looking back on his own childhood. And that's why I meant you've got to really attend to your child's natural innate temperament and who he is, and don't try to change him, just parent him as he is.
Yeah, right. Okay, next question. This is your next the next marriage you have to save. My son is starting primary school at the end of August. He's been offered two school places. One is really close to us, the other is 20 minutes away, which makes the commute from home, work and school a bit trickier. If my son goes to the school that's closer to us, he won't know any of his new classmates. If he goes to the one that's further away, he'll be going with who he says is his best friend. He's done all the various baby classes with his little buddy since they were about 10 weeks old and started creche together at the same time. Their friendship has gotten particularly strong over the past year, and these two little guys are simply mad about each other. But what school should I send him to? My husband thinks I'm being a bit silly, giving more weight to going to the school that's a bit further away, as it'll add more inconvenience to our lives in terms of scheduling getting out the door in the mad rush mornings and collecting everyone after work. Everyone I talk to about this has responded with, ah yeah, he's only 4, he'll make new friends. My son is very sociable and I've no doubt he'll make more friends in any school he goes to, but I feel the importance of his friendship to him in his life right now is being disregarded in a way, as he's only 4. I feel that if he goes to school with the comfort and knowledge of having his buddy with him, that will give him a bit of a head start on an emotional and behavioural level. I'm aware that a lot of this is probably my own anxieties about him going to school, so I'm being careful not to pass these on to him. He can struggle with transitions, and if primary school comes into the conversation now, he'll ask me if primary school is a long time away and is reassured when I tell him it is, but that when it's time to go, he's going to love it. I feel that if I tell him he'll be going to the same school as his friend, that he will literally be running in the doors on the first day, but that if he goes to the school where he knows no one, that he will find this more challenging. What would Joanna advise?
Oh my goodness. And you know, I think this is really relatable because it's coming up to that time of year where, you know, the incoming September school offers have just come out or are coming out. And I think, first of all, you've got choices and you think that's what you want until you have a choice. And then you feel it's a curse of a choice. And if you'd only had the one offer, you wouldn't even have to deliberate on this. But the point here is it's 100% a parental choice. Okay, there is no right or wrong.
Yeah.
And for me, this comes down to towards the end of this letter, where you talk about, you know, your feeling if he goes to school that, you know, with the comfort and knowledge of having his buddy, he'll have a head start. OK, I have to say this sounds very like that you will be much more reassured about handing him over into school when you know he has his buddy and you don't have to worry. Will he have someone to play with? Will he be able to play in the yard? Who will he sit with? Because you will have that in your head. And that's OK, by the way, us parents. And our children started, it's a big transition for us as much as the kids as well. So I think just if that is true, own that. And as well, while you're being careful not to pass it on to him, you are absolutely passing this on to him because we can't, but we're only human. We're not robots. So when we're stressed and, you know, we're ruminating on this and what's the right thing to do, some, at least some of that uncertainty and anxiety is coming out. So he's like, is it a long way away? Is it a long way away? He's really asking, you know, we don't have to think about this now. I think as soon as you can, try to make a call on this so that you can proactively be pointing out the school. This is your school, that you can be supremely positive and confident about it. He can get a picture of it in his mind and you begin to work towards it. I also think, while it's lovely, and I totally get it, by the way, and I certainly don't want to dismiss young children's friendships, because there is, you know, we've talked about it before, there is a pattern to how they evolve through friendships, but it's not unheard of for someone to have a friend that they've had since preschool days. And these little guys have known each other since they were babies, and I'm guessing so have their parents known each other since they were babies. Mm-hmm. So there is a nice positive codependency, but it is a codependency here as well. And I would be careful of putting so much pressure on a friendship at this age, you know, that you're attributing that this is going to give him a head start on an emotional and behavior level. That's not the function of friendship, and that's not what it will do. And he does sound like he's well able and ready for school, and you describe him in very positive terms as being sociable, well able to make friends, that this is an adaptable, resilient little guy. So the answer is, by the way, he will make new friends in a new school.
Yeah.
Whether you send him to the school on your doorstep or the one 20 minutes away, he will have more friends than this one friend, as he should, as you want him to have. Because, you know, if you make a decision that is not really in your family lifestyle best interest, but is about this friendship, what if that friend moves away? What if that those two kids in 2 years have outgrown each other and they play with other kids and you realize I made a life decision for our family based on 2 4-year-olds relationship only? If that is the only variable here that you're pinning it on, I would say park it. You've got to park it and weigh up. What is the commute going to be like? What is the rush in the morning? How is that going to impact my child? The ideal is that it is calm and smooth and that transitions are easier when we're not all frazzled and frenzied and running out the door with one shoe on and one shoe still lost under the bed, all kind of in a rush and a hurry to sit in traffic. So if you're saying, look, we have an offer of a school we're happy with that would alleviate all of that, personally, I'm not telling you what to do, but personally, that would hold a huge sway for me.
Joanna, thanks a million as ever. Joanna Fortune, there you are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We're going to take a break after that. And the woman who watched Cuba.
Moncrief on News Talk.